Good evening. It would make sense, it genuinely would make sense to, we're learning every evening, we have the schus of learning the words of the Heilige Chofetz Chaim. It would make sense to just go past his yard site. Thank you so much for pointing it out. To go past the yard site of the Holy Chofetz Chaim without mentioning that it is his yard site, and I think we just missed it. Was it Tuesday? Yeah, so fine. So it's just like within the same couple of days. So I want to just share with you what personally did this. I don't believe all the stories about the Chofetz Chaim, simply because I don't think all of them are true. But some of them definitely are true. But it's quite amazing. But what I want to say is actually what touches me the most about the Chofetz Chaim. What touches me the most about the Chofetz Chaim is not even a story. It's just a simple fact, a biographical fact about the Holy Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim was probably, I think it's true to say that he was the great, in last century, in the 20th century, I think he was the most, the person with the greatest impact, probably in Klal Yisrael. Probably it's true to say that. Okay, of course there was a Chazon Ish, and of course there was other very great. But in a way, the Mishnah Berurah made it into every single Yiddish house. And the Pesach is always, the Chazon Ish writes that the Pesach is always going to be like the Mishnah Berurah. It's the last one that is always, you can always paskin like the Mishnah Berurah. There's not many authorities you can say you can always paskin like him. Besides the fact that it's incredible how much he managed to write, I mean, the Chofetz Chaim, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky used to say, can be medayik a Mishnah Berurah like a Rishon. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said, you can learn a Mishnah Berurah like you learn a Rishon. I don't think he said it, but you know the Achan. And it's quite amazing how much he wrote, and the Duke, how much he wrote, and not only that, but then it's the Chofetz Chaim, the Sefer Chofetz Chaim, then the Shmir Saloshen, and his other sforim that he wrote, Machne Soil and Shem Oilom, and there's so many sforim that he wrote. It's incredible how much he wrote. The his power and his authority and his great Koyach HaPesach and his godless and he had his. And I think what makes me what's the most humbling out of all this is that. It's quite amazing to look at. It's not a secret, you know, that he came from an extremely humble background. His father was not a Rav, and was very far away from being a Rav. He was a very simple man, and his mother was very. There's nobody within the Chofetz Chaim's close family that had any rabbinical positions. When he was very far from that, they were very simple. It was a very simple background. Even his grandparents and his going back, yes, if you go back Yichas, many generations before, they probably was some Yichas, but in the immediate family, there was absolutely nothing within the Chofetz Chaim family, which was who we call, you know, the shiny, the famous, you know, that it was any of at all. He was what we call a self-made man. Absolutely, from beginning to end, a self-made man. He made it into being the greatest halachic authority of the last century from absolutely nothing. There was nothing there. And you know, even when he got married, there's a famous story that he got married with his step-sister, the famous story that, you know, that's absolutely a true story, that his father died and his mother got remarried. And when she got married to a very nice man, but a pretty simple man as well, And when he got to know the Chofetz Chaim, he was so impressed of him. He was only like 16, 17 years old. He was very impressed of the Chofetz Chaim because of his middos and because of his... he was in yeshiva most of the time, but because of his middos and his edelkeit and his Torah, he was very impressed. He said, you know what, I've got a son and you've got a daughter. So he said, you know, why don't I make a shidduch? And they made that shidduch. So he married his step, which is... And it wasn't quite right. He was, you know, they were talking about him marrying, you know, famous and Dayonim and into most famous or Shivish families. And he didn't. He was, you know, he was just happy to, you know, Shver wasn't any, you know, there was no fame and no money and no greatness and no Rabbonus, no Dayonus, no famous positions and famous roles, none of that in the immediate family. And yet he made it into such an incredible godless. I think that's just, that itself is source for such incredible inspiration. They always think that you need to have protection, you need to have money, you need to have yichas, you need to have this. But when it comes to the Chofetz Chaim, is a proof that it's not true. He just sat and learned the Shem Shemayim. for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years. And that's what it is. It's just amazing. I think it's just unbelievably inspirational. And that just reminded me of a short thought, which I think is good for this time of year. We know that the Mishnah Yuma says, you know, we have gotten Yom Kippur. There's the two goats. One is La Hashem, and one is La Azazel. So how does it work? The Mishnah Yuma tells us that the two goats are chosen. One of them goes with the Kohen Godly Shechted in the Kodesh. Goes right in the Zrika, Mamash in the Kodesh Kedoshim. The most holy person of Kedal Yisrael, the Kohen Godly. In the most holy place, in the Kodesh Kedoshim. Only the most holy day of the year, Yom Kippur. That goat makes it. Absolutely. He made it. He made it into right in the Kodesh Kedoshim with the Kohen Godly on Yom Kippur. What about the other goat? The goat goes to Azazel. Hamidbor into the desert, thrown down the cliff. It can be done through a zohar, it doesn't have to be a coin. It can be thrown out of the cave, no shechita, nothing connected to Yiddishkeit, nothing connected to, not Yiddishkeit, nothing connected to Ruchnias, nothing to do with Kedusha, Ta'ara, nothing. Thrown down the cliff. But, despite all this, what you see is the beginning of it. What is the beginning of it? When they are picked, those two goats, the Mishnah tells us, they need to be shovim b'mare, b'koyma, v'shavias. The two goats need to be identical twins, and they need to be absolutely the same value. Can't have one more valuable than the other. They must be the same height and the same appearance, the same looks. Well, to me, all the goats look the same, but that's besides the point. But they need to be identical in looks, in height, in value. If one of them dies, you want to replace the other one, you've got to replace both of them because they need to be identical, absolutely identical. So what does that teach us? So Pshim Shem Fol here says, and the Bei Yosef as well, it's beautiful to see the same vault in two Gdolim. No connection to that. Bei Yosef lived in Mazdamag in Yerushalayim, and Pshim Fol Hirsch lives in Frankfurt, and independently they wrote the same vault. This is to teach us that when it comes to Yerushalayim Yom Kippur, we both stand in front of Kodesh Baruch Hu the same. We're all exactly the same. You know, you can't, you know, one has got, there's no protective, we all stand exactly the same. One of them, some of us make it Lifnei Hashem, some of us make it closer to Kodesh Baruch Hu. And Cholil, if you don't do the right effort, then Cholil, a person can help Mohammed Bawa. It's about, but we're all the same level when it comes to that, to the Yom Ne'orim. We're all exactly the same. We're equal in Shavah, Mare, Koima, Shavias. And I think the Chofetz Chaim is the biggest proof for that. That a person can, without any preconditions, can make it so high. Fine. Okay. Okay, let us continue with the halachas of Kiddush Levon. We're up to Simon, Tov, Chof, Vav, and we're up to Seif Gimel. And the halachas is full of page 574. Until when can you say Kiddush Levon? Until when is the last date that you can say Kiddush Levon? At Tes Zayin, until the 16th. Miyoyim HaMoylet, from the day of the Moylot. The Moylot, we know, is always goes according to Yerushalayim. For Lo Tes Zayin, Bechlop, on the 16th is already too late. You've missed it. 16th is too late. Ve'en le'kadesh, and you can only make Kiddush Levon at Elo at Chatzi Chof Tes Yud Beis Tov Shin Tzadik Gimel Min HaMoylet. So it has to be until that hour of the Moylet. But here's the point. He has to be until the 16th, and excluding the 17th. That's when you can do the Kiddush Levon. You can't do after that. Now let's see what the Mishnah Berurah says. Mishnah Berurah says, in Yudches, just explaining it, once the 15th day of the month has completed, it decreases, the moon decreases after the 15th has passed. The whole idea of Kiddush Levon is the renewal of the new moon. Once you're past the 15th, there is no more renewal. You missed it. Now, this is in terms of until when can you recite Kiddush Levon? When is the starting point of Kiddush Levon? The starting point of Kiddush Levon is after the seventh day of the month. Seventh. Hold on, before you see the Ramah. So, Shiva, you need to have the seventh. Is that what people are makpid on? You wait 7 days for Kiddush Levon? Or you do the... Some people do, but some... 3 days, says the Mishnah Berurah, the opinion of 3 days. First white line. Hachavu Shiva. Roiv Achoinim plig al zeh. The majority of the Achoinim disagree. And they hold. Veledidu al kolponim lachashloishim. They hold that. No, you've got to wait 3 days. And that's it. You don't have to wait 7. You can wait 3 days after.
from 3 days on, you can say Kiddush Levon already. Meis leis meis hamoilet, 3 days after the moilet. Shenenin kvam meorot, because we are benefiting already from its light of the moon. V'yesh levorech oleo, and you can make a bracha. Ve'ein lahachmitz mitzvah, to not allow the mitzvah to go sour. Don't delay it. So after 3 days, you can't Kiddush Levon. I must say, in England, that's definitely a very good idea. Definitely a good idea to do after 3 days already. And some achronim and the Gvilna Gaon also holds, go for 3 days, don't wait 7 days. It's not worth delaying the mitzvah further than 3 days. Therefore, Hanoyek Kane, the one who has got the custom of making Kiddush after 3 days, that's certainly a good opinion to rely on, and certainly in the winter months of the year, it's definitely, certainly worthwhile just going for the opinion of 3 days as opposed to 7 days. Pavada Azoris, Likadesh Arizem Meshubach, to one who is quick and swift in doing this mitzvah, this is definitely praiseworthy. The question is here, on the one hand we've got Zizim Akdimin, on the other hand we've got Motzei Shabbos, which is a Hiddur. And here comes the question, to very degree, if the 3 days is Thursday night, do you want to perhaps wait for day five, which is Motzei Shabbos? And that's, I think, what a lot of people... Yeah, because Motzei Shabbos, we learned, is good. That's the question. That's when you have to, like, value and balance the... You know, when is Hiddur Mitzvah better than Zrizin, and when is Zrizin better than Hiddur? And that's... that depends. But, on the whole, when it comes to the winter, so often we can't do it on Motzei Shabbos. No, it's so frequent. So, you know, you might as well do Zrizin. But these are... reason for to do 3 days, Zrizin Maktib Nemitzvahs. It's
one or 2 days.
Oh, because before that, it's not renewal yet. It hasn't appeared yet. You're not benefiting from it yet. You need to have benefit from it, yeah. Because that opinion holds that you're only getting a genuine, proper benefit after 7. It's not real light before that. Okay, Siv Dalet. Now that's, we've spoken about under the roof. We don't say Sarek Bosh Lakel. We don't say Sarek Bosh Lakel if you should recite it again. Uh-huh. As opposed to... I see. Interesting. Who says that? Stay Chemet. Very interesting. Okay. Now, roof. Is the roof a problem or not? You shouldn't say, recite because you want under a roof. What? Under. Is it a problem? Is it really a problem? Indoors, yeah. Okay, I think there's a bit of misconception about that. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Siv Dalet, Eim Evochin Oleo, you don't make, sorry, Dermah, here to finish off Dermah, Ve'ein Mekatshin Alvona Tachsegag, you may not recite Kiddush Levona Tachsegag under a roof. See, it is true. The Dermah does say, you may not recite Kiddush Levona under a indoors. Now, why is that? Sivkot Mchavalev and Mishnah Buot, bottom line, Tachzegag under a roof. Helo Tachzkipat Shemaim, he has to be under the Shemaim, under the sky. Why? Vatam, the reason for that is, the Kiddush Levona, Ikigabolas Pnei Ashchina. Because Kiddush Levona is as if you're accepting the Shchina, you're accepting HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we are going to a meeting, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were. The ends of the covenant is not respectful and dignified. You know, as if the king is coming and you're like waiting in a sheltered area. It's not right. You have to go towards. It's not respectful and dignified if you go towards the royalty. Therefore, you leave the roofed indoor area to the street. As if you go towards the king. You know, it's as if you're hesitant to go towards royalty, towards the Kodesh Baruch Hu, so therefore he's staying under the roof. And therefore, it's proper to go in an open area. Mikol Markham, nevertheless, Kol Zeh Rak Lechatchila, this is only Lechatchila, for Mishichosh Beizem Meichosh. But if somebody is not well, Shalui Cholot Zeh Slechot, he's unable to go out. Inami, or alternatively, Shamokam Enenoki, the outer area smells and is not clean. Or Shishor Ben Akam, or perhaps you're under the Hamitz Goyim, that you feel uncomfortable and perhaps even scared to go out on the street. You may recite Kiddush Levana in your house, derech chloin, by the window, or Pesach HaPasuach, or by the door, neged Levana, towards the moon.
So here he goes. It is actually Machlokes Rishonim, or early Achronim. The Ramah quotes the opinion that one should go under the, should go out of the roofed area, one should go out of, but nobody agrees that some Rishonim hold that it's not even a problem at all in the first place. So, but yeah, it's certainly, but, so if somebody's in the hospital, with a, somebody's in the hospital, you know, and he can see out the window, he can see the moon, so it's not a problem. So that's what he's meant to do. Yeah. The words of the Ramah are, tachas agag, which would imply, well, how'd you learn it? Is that considered tachas kippas ha-shamayim? Are you under the sky if you're under... Yeah. Yeah, I've seen people are makpid, but I don't even know if one has to be, because lechayru you are tachas kippas ha-shamayim. If the svar is, if the rationale is, you're meant to go towards the king, you got to go out in the street for the king. Do you think you're fulfilling that or not? Now, apparently the Chazon Ish, I'll tell you, I think Chazon Ish is to go onto the, on the Chazon Ish is to go onto the Mirpeset, onto the balcony, which had on top another balcony on top. He said that was fine. It's probably the same thing. Now, why did he do that? Apparently, they say, what could be the reason? Why was it good enough to go on the balcony?
Why is it good enough?
Why is it not good enough? No, I don't know why it didn't go out, but why is it good enough, according to Chazon Ish? Yeah. And the whole reason why we have to go out is because...
Benefit.
And also, benefit, yeah, towards the king, yeah. Right. So I think that the Chazon Ish must have learned, I saw this somewhere, the Chazon Ish learned that it's about exiting the building. That's what you do. If the king comes, king doesn't want you to be... It's not the point that you have to be out in the rain, kind of. That's not the vault. The thing is that you are making an effort of going out towards him. That's what you're going to do. So you're making the effort of exiting your building towards the king. And the Chazon Ish seems to understand that if you're doing that, okay, it doesn't matter, it's a balcony and there's a roof on top. It doesn't matter, as long as you've made the effort of going out into the open area. So that's why he felt it's okay. So I think it's probably okay. It should be probably fine. But you see that people are makpid on it, but yeah. Probably, yeah, you're right. Probably. I think you're probably right, yeah.
Even yeah. The
probably. I think you're probably right. Now, I saw that there is a shaila about, in Eretz Yisrael, it's very common. You know the tzfadea? Do you remember the tzfadea? The dustbins, that's right. You know the big green skips, yeah? Basically, yeah? And instead of, in Eretz Yisrael, the way the dustbin, the rubbish is collected. You don't have the civilized systems. You just dump this rubbish into these big skips, or you just pour it out, or you just whatever, or you put the dustbin bags in these big, they're basically green skips, and they're sort of covered, some of it. Some of it is covered, most of it is not. And when the rubbish collection, they'll just pour it all in that rubbish. And it smells terribly. Often they smell awful. Sometimes there's cats in there. You see them jumping out when they actually... Yeah, you see the cats jumping out. Sometimes they make it, sometimes they don't. And that's part of the fun of the... Right, so and they are called, because of its color, and perhaps because of its shape, they're called tzvadea. Because it's green, so I suppose there is some comparison to a frog, I'm not sure. So it's called tzvadea. Now, and there's always a strong smell emerging from them, understandably. Now, the question is... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the shaila is as follows: it was mamash that shaila in Chaniche. It's quite common because they die everywhere, right? Every street is going to have a few of those tzvadea. So the question is: do you remember them? Yeah. So there are four of them, and the tzad shove of them is the smell emerging. That's what's like. Now the shaila is as follows: what if the shul right outside it is one of those dustbin skips? And it's not particularly clean, and it certainly does have a bit of an odor. And the question is, what are you going to do about Kiddush Levana?
Are you saying it's also to
Yeah, perhaps it's not. Yeah. It's also Zohar. So I never experienced it, but I saw some of the contemporary poskim and rabbonim. They say that since the whole idea of doing it tachas kippas hashemayim, why are many do it under the roof? Because you're approaching royalty. Now it's not dignified to go into to go towards royalty in a place that smells. It's only a lechatchila to do tachas kippas. If there's no other place nearby, which you can see the moon, then you should say Kiddush Levana in shul. What do you think about that? She says that in Eretz Yisrael, which is very common, very frequently, you've got those tzfadeas in front of the shul. He said it might make more sense to change that and not to do Kiddush Levana right outside the shul, rather to stay inside and do it there. It's more dignified. What do you think about that? Yeah, I suppose if you can, but the shul that I'm thinking of in particular, he's like on a slanty, very, very slanty. And then when you go out from the other side, there's a building, and very often you won't be able to see the Levana. It's too high. The building is too tall. How far do you have to walk? Yeah. Yes, true. You don't, yeah. But I saw that the person can also speak about if you are facing something which is Anunnaki, is that a problem or not? Say it's not a problem, but at the end of the day, you can see that it's not dignified and it perhaps doesn't make so much sense. Yes, that's with regards to, it's Tov Chav Zayin. So that's the end of halachas of Kiddush Levana. Tov Chav Zayin. It's amazing how many halachas days about Kiddush Levana, no? It's amazing. It's really amazing. Something to think about. Kshirosh Chodesh, Shnei Yomim, Heich Kosim B'Shtoros. A very short sermon, just telling us about Shtoros, the contracts. If there's 2 days of Chodesh, what do you write in the contract? So the halacha is as follows. Kshirosh Chodesh, Shnei Yomim, and Chodesh is 2 days. Kosim B'Shtoros, you'll write in any contract, B'Yoim, Horishan, B'Yoim, Rosh Chodesh, Shu, Yoim Shloshim, L'Chodesh Sha'ova. The correct nusach is as follows. Rosh Chodesh, and the first day of Rosh Chodesh, which is the 30th day of the previous month. In order to avoid confusion. What's the confusion that we're trying to avoid? 2 days of Rosh Chodesh. We're trying to avoid previous month. Yeah, so the way you're going to do it is you write B'yoyim HaRishon, B'yoyim Rosh Chodesh, Shiyoyim Shloishim L'Chodesh Sha'avah, 30th day of the previous month. Which is Chodesh. V'amini l'Chodesh, v'yemashen v'koysim pe'echol l'Chodesh. K'shem'abrin ha'shana, when there's a leap year, like last year, like the past year, yeah. Koysim v'adarishin, odor stam, huvesheni odor hashin. That's a very interesting discussion. In a leap year, which one is the real odor? In a leap year, there's adarishin, odor sheni. If you've seen a leap year, somebody writing odor, what does it mean? The first or the second odor? So the Shulchan Aruch writes, "Kshem Abrin." The Rama writes, "Kshem Abrin Hashana." When it's a leap year, Kosim Moderation Odor Stam. You write in the first Odor Stam Odor, and the second one is Odor Sheni. That means that if you see a leap year Odor, it means the first Odor. Now this is not possible because has anybody have a yard site or a birthday in Odor? What do you do then? Oh, so there's a very big discussion. If there is a leap year and somebody was born in non-leap year, birth in Odor? Adoration? Oh. So what do you do then if there's a leap year and you were born in non-leap year? When is your birthday? Or, Lahavdil, when is the Yahrzeit? It's a very big discussion that. It must be very relevant to your job when it comes to Yahrzeit and burials and how do they... Yeah, it must be very... it is a common shaila. So generally, we go for the second odor, being the real odor. Nevertheless, when it comes to contracts, we write, and there's only one odor, it's only called odor. We assume that it's odorishin, and odor sheni has to be specified as being odor sheni. The same applies also to Mevorchen HaChodesh, Mishnah Berurah says... in Sifkot and Gimel Odor Stam. Similarly, when we
when we bench the Chodesh in Shul, and then we also, then Adar is, I don't know if we always do that. How do you, we say Adar. Rosh Chodesh, Adar. Yeah. Do we say Adoration? So according to Mishabu, you really don't have to. But I also seem to remember that in some places they do. Rosh Chodesh, Adar. But the it is good to specify both adoration, you write adoration, you say adoration. But he said that really, if you don't say, if you don't stipulate, if you don't specify, then stam odor in the leap year is the first odor, and you have to specify adoration. But it's better yet, to avoid any confusion, is to write adoration, to say and write adoration, and subsequently, right and say Odosheni. Rabbi Isai, we learned this evening about the Kiddush Levana's last, the end time is the 16th, having completed the 15th of the month. We learned that you can, according to Shulchan Aruch, you only start saying Kiddush Levana after 7 days. The Mishnah Berurah is quite comfortable advising us that you can do after 3 days. That's what the Vilna Gaon holds and many Achronim. Certainly in the winter, you should go for the this opinion of starting Kiddush Levana after 3 days. We discussed that when it's clashing with Hiddur Mitzvah Motzei Shabbos, you've got to balance it a little bit. Right, then we learned about the Ramah that you don't do Kiddush Levana under a roof because it's not, that's not the way you accept royalty. We learned that it's certainly okay to do in an indoor area. Finally, we learned Simon Tov Chov Zayin that told us that when it's 2 months of Adar, then if you just say Adar, it means Adoration, unless you specify, but if you don't specify, you can assume that other stam means adoration. However, it is good practice to specify either way. Good evening.